You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Hey, Google.
Stop. All right, so speaking of weed or marijuana, cannabis. Yeah, I know. Who is talking about that, right? It's on my brain. A lot of reasons why it's on my brain is because the great state of Illinois that I live in, and I use the great kind of with air quotes, just legalized marijuana in 2020. In the the spots where it has been deemed where they have a license to sell it, you can now buy recreational marijuana. And it's one of those things that it's not on my brain all the time, even though I think I've talked about this in the past. There is a weird thing where it's like, because it's available now, I want to get some and consume it because it's now available. But I'm one of those guys that I don't pay attention to the news stories, where I've realized now that after that product becomes legalized in a state, I guess this is a trend or history that I didn't know about, was that because the demand is so high that supply runs out. And all these clinics that are legally allowed to sell marijuana to consumers, they have to keep enough product on hand in order to, for those that have a prescription. So the medical marijuana, they have to keep stock available for that. So if they have just enough stock to fulfill those demands, then they can't sell recreational marijuana. So since it was legalized at the beginning of January 1st, I guess a lot of people ran out and got product and waited in a lot of lines, and now it's just not available because, as you can imagine, we ran out of supply. So that's the nature kit of supply and demand. It may take a little while before I'm able to, casually go to a store and pick some up. And this is actually inspired by, this topic idea, or this preamble discussion was, like I said, inspired by another podcast. There's a Drunk Medical Stories podcast. The co-host, Terry, had been on our podcast before talking about Last Action Hero. And then recently she had just sent me two stickers for their podcast, which really looks awesome. I've got one sticker on my laptop and the other one I've got right here, so I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do with it. But their most recent episode is titled To Pee or Not to Pee. And they talk about drug testing. So I started to reflect on my own stories of interaction with marijuana. And actually, I have one where I had failed a drug test. but I didn't want to start with that story for you guys because I have kind of the whole four stories to really share, to give the whole experience of my life with cannabis. And so I've had limited interactions, to tell you the truth. It's one of those things that it's always been kind of the forbidden fruit. It's been out there, but it's one of those things that I haven't really made a huge effort. I'm the kind of guy that once you kind of roll into any kind of roadblock or make it difficult for me to do something stupid, then I'm just like, well, maybe the world's telling me not to do that something stupid, so I just don't do it. So whether it's being lazy, but at the same time, it kind of limits my living on the edge kind of thought process, if that's what you've thought of me, because I'm not that guy. And it's probably kind of obvious as you've listened to me. So the first thing was actually not even dealing directly with marijuana or drugs. But my mom, she, when I was a kid growing up, she worked for the police station. She was a police dispatcher. And one of the times that as I was walking home, I'd stop by the police station after school. And I was visiting with her before I walked the rest of the way home. So it's kind of a midway point. And one of the officers showed me around the back room where they booked people that had broken the law. And so he was showing me all the different stations when they're booking somebody in the holding cells. And he says, let me show you something. So he puts the cuffs on me and he looks at me very square in the eyes, very, very serious. And he says, Dave, don't ever make me put these on you for real. And I knew by looking at him, he was not fucking around. This guy was total serious. He's a good friend of the family, but at the same time, he scared me straight before I even thought about doing anything wrong. So this was probably in the neighborhood of when I was 12, 13-ish. So he kind of scared me straight before I even thought about doing something stupid. So credit to him. He kept me on the straight and narrow, even though I'm not the kind of guy that was, you know, doing those reckless things. So scared straight before I did anything, something stupid. Fast forward. I've told this story before, I think. But when I was in the Navy, when I was leaving my training station, I had partied a little bit too much before I was supposed to take a drug test, and I actually failed the drug test. I took something called No-Dose, which at the time, I don't know if it's still the case, but has an active ingredient of THC, which comes across as marijuana with a urinalysis test. I didn't think about putting that on the form when I had taken the drug test to say that I had taken No-Dose that same day, because I didn't think anything of it. Really, I took the No-Dose because a classmate had offered it to me because I was struggling staying awake because we drank too much. Who's to blame there? Once again, it was one of those things that I was so scared about because of the way I was being treated, because I was being treated as if I was somebody that was out smoking a lot of marijuana, and I didn't know why I had failed this test. And so I was so convinced that I was going to get drummed out of the Navy because of this drug test, because they didn't get a new sample. They just took the same sample and sent it somewhere else. And I was convinced that I was going to fail that because if I failed it once, I'll fail it again. I had no idea, you know, because of that relationship, if I was going to pass it or not. I didn't know what my future was going to look like. I didn't think that having a dishonorable discharge from the Navy for having failed a drug test was going to look good on a resume. So, once again, that was about 1989-ish, or not 1999-ish, it was 1989. And at that time, I was 18, going on 19. And once again, that kept me on the straight and narrow because I was like, because of that, you know, the stigma of getting in trouble, and like I didn't want anything to do with that. So now, fast forward till I'm in my late 40s. I have had no interaction whatsoever with marijuana between then and that time. It was one of those things that I just wasn't interested in because of what was happening in my youth. But it was always one of those things I was curious about. So I'm working for a small company, and one of the ladies that works for me actually has a prescription for medical marijuana. So she's allowed to get edibles. And one of the nights, it was just the two of us in the office, and we're talking, and I let slip that I never really had partaken of marijuana. So she was like, "You know what? I'll bring you an edible and, you know, for you." I'm like, "Okay, thank you." Don't think anything of it. It's not like one of those things that I remind her. One of the days that we're in the office again a few weeks later, she hands me a little Ziploc bag, and it has one of the edibles. And I forgot what she had called it. She recommended that I cut it in half because, you know, didn't know my interaction with it and, you know, how my body would take it. And so it's like one of those things that just kind of sat in like my drawer forever. And I didn't really touch it again or even think about it. And there was a evening, I forgot how many weeks after the fact, and I was like, you know, I suddenly remembered it in my head, and I'm like, you know what? It's no harm, no foul here. I'm going to give it a whirl. And not knowing what to kind of expect, I ended up taking the edible. I cut it in half, and then I cut it in half of that, so a fourth of the original. And I eat that, and then like an hour and a half, nothing's happening. Absolutely nothing. And then I decide that after the hour and a half, I'm like, all right, this is just kind of a waste. I take the other fourth, and I also have a bourbon. So it was just basically a short glass of bourbon, not really a tall glass. And so I now had a half of the edible and some bourbon in me, and shit, did that sucker kick in. I remember filling the couch, we have a sectional couch, and filling the comforter, thinking to myself that this is the most comfortable couch in the world. And I just couldn't stop just rubbing my hand on it and being amazed by it. I was randomly giggling. There is a wood pattern on the floor, for our kitchen. And there's a step up, and in the little wood pattern, it's like the fake wood covering. And there's like what I associated with look like S's. And I suddenly remember becoming fascinated with counting how many S's I found in the in that pattern. By the way, there were 8. But I just remember that whole episode while I was still tripping was, you know, how soft the couch was. And I couldn't imagine there being any softer couch in the world at that moment. How many S's I can find in the wood grain pattern. And just being just overly happy and giggling. So I just remember that, just tripping really, really hard on that. And I'm sure that was a combination of having the half dose and bourbon mixed together, and not knowing, you know, giving myself the patience to just let it, you know, kind of digest and work in my system. Really, the only other story that I've got, very short story, is that recent trip that I went overseas. I did go to a smoke shop. They call them coffee shops, and I did try to purchase something, but at the same time, I had the wrong currency because I had bought exchange currency when we were in London. I got euros, and then we went from London to the Netherlands. I never thought to change my currency from euros to pounds, and when I went to the coffee shop, I actually did go to the counter and order something, which is basically a cigarette. and he wrapped it up and put it in a bag. And then when I went to go give him the money, I was giving him euros, and he said, no, we need pounds. And I didn't have any way to convert the currency at that given point. So I just, it was like one of those things that, as I said, that when you run into that roadblock in my head, I'm like, screw it, not going to do it. So that's it. That's kind of my interaction and stories along with that. And it was, like I said, an inspiration for listening to the other podcasts. I've now gone on 15 minutes just talking about weed. And that's not why you're tuning in, is it? You're not really interested in this, are you? Anyway, I was just being way too brutally honest, but I felt, you know what? It's on my brain. I'm going to share it. What the fuck? I've got a microphone. Whether you're listening to me or not, that's on you. And by the way, back to the beginning, courtesy and thank you to Olivia Newton-John for giving us Xanadu. But now that we've already wasted like 16 minutes of your time, I'm going to go ahead and insert the bumper and get started on the real topic of discussion.
This is 80-something podcast.
I don't think there's anybody back there.
You or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals. Go Ghostbusters! Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you!
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
It to each other. And party on, dudes!
Hey, this is Dave, and you are listening to Bonsai Retro Club Podcast. We really do appreciate you taking the time and downloading us and checking us out. What you are tuning in for, this is one of our 1980s Essential Movie Podcast episodes. What you may not know, or what you may know, is I found a list on RottenTomatoes.com that lists the top 140 1980s Essential Movie movies to watch. This is put together by their contributors, editors, or whoever does the work over there at Rotten Tomatoes. And so what I've been doing as a challenge to myself is recording an episode for every one of these movies. So what I've been doing is working my way down from 140. I am now at, I lost the page, now at number 89, which is The Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad, released in 1988. So now we go, hey Google, tell us about The Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad.
The Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad is a 1988 movie directed by David Zucker, starring Leslie Nielsen, Priscilla Presley, and O.J. Simpson.
Hey Google, what's the plot of The Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad?
Here's the synopsis of The Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad. Frank Drebin, Leslie Nielsen, a rather clueless police detective, tries to foil a plot to turn innocent people into assassins through mind control. After his partner, Norberg O.J. Simpson, is shot, Frank sets out to find the culprit, leading him to business tycoon Vincent Ludwig, Ricardo Montalban. However, Frank has no evidence until he meets Jane Spencer, Priscilla Presley, Ludwig's assistant. She knows nothing about Ludwig's devious plans, but falls for Frank and agrees to help him.
This is part where Google kind of screws things up, because then it just say Ricardo Montalban. Montalban? It's Ricardo Montalban from Fantasy Island.
In this city, there's crime on every street. But one man has seen enough. He's Lieutenant Frank Drebin.
Whatever scum did this, not one man on this force will rest for 1 minute until he's behind bars.
Now let's grab a bite to eat.
He's a good cop who's having a bad day. His best friend...
Everyone should have a friend like you.
...is in a coma.
As soon as Nordberg is better, he's welcome back at police squad.
But I wouldn't wait until the last minute to fill out those organ donor cards.
His girlfriend... ...asked him to look her up.
Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
Let me help you with that.
And his city is in the hands of a master criminal with a sinister plan.
I must kill the queen.
How can any police story contain this much action? This much romance?
I like cops.
All right.
Or this much baseball? Starring Leslie Nielsen, a cop who's always on the alert. Mikhail Gorbachev.
I knew it.
Queen Elizabeth, everyone's favorite queen. Priscilla Presley, a woman who really cooks.
How hot and wet do you like it?
Ricardo Montalban.
Frank.
You're both right.
George Kennedy, the partner with an appetite for danger. O.J. Simpson, as you've never seen him before. And Reggie Jackson in his first dramatic role. In a movie so big, it had to be filmed in color. The Naked Gun, from the files of Police Squad.
Coming this Christmas to a theater near you. See you then.
So I just watched this, actually. So it's one of those things that I was approaching this a few weeks ago, and I knew this was coming up. I'm like, I remember almost nothing from this movie. Almost nothing. I just remember there being a scene with him protecting the queen at a baseball game. That's all I remembered. I don't remember any of the details. So as luck would have it, I found it available on Netflix, currently still available, and it took me to viewing because it's like one of those things where I was watching the movie as I fall asleep, then I catch myself falling asleep, so I turn it off, go to bed, and then I was able to catch up and watch the rest of it. This is one of those things that kind of borderline, where it's like one of those things where it's almost a little bit too stupid, but if you put it in the same frame of perspective of watching Airplane, then you're like, okay, then that, you know, that's the frame of mind you've got to be in when you're watching this. It's like one of those things where it's tough for me when I see the scenes with OJ, because he's been tainted now based on his current life choices and events. I still think he's guilty of sin for having, you know, committed the death of his wife. I think that he's responsible, even though he was not found guilty. But he ran away. He ran away from the law, and I don't want to go down there on this. I'm supposed to be talking about the damn movie, but because of these things that these stars that. They're human, okay? They are human, but I can't, I associate him with being a murderer. I associate, like Bill Cosby now with being, a rapist, And so, these are, the memory of these guys where, I had great memories of them back in the late 80s and, being a comedic actor as OJ was trying to be, I think, as much as he could be. But it was like one of those things where I'm when I see them in those other, in those capacities and when I'm rewatching these movies, it's tough for me to get around based on what I know about what happens to them in the future. here in 2020 or, 2019 or whatever. So that's the reason why it's tough for me to see OJ in this movie. But let's remove him because, look, his part's not, I mean, it's significant because it kind of sets a chain of events. But, a lot of the activity happens with, not specifically with him, just because of him. He gets injured, then insert Drebin, Leslie Nelson doing, who's his partner, who, is trying to find out why he had gotten injured, and, who's responsible. And then, the hijinks ensue and a lot of stupid comedy. Probably something that I found really, really funny, and I wouldn't say the best, part of the movie, but was even the intro. The intro where you're getting the credits and you have the police car with the light going through the city, and then eventually it's even going through a locker room. And it was just funny. It was just funny to see that, the camera view of what it's supposed to be like on a police car and, the various scenes that it was putting itself into. So if anything, just watching the first, 2-3 minutes of the movie, you get a good, laugh, from that. Let's see what else. I like the montage scene between Priscilla Presley and Leslie Nelson where they're falling in love and, then you see them running on the beach and, tripping people up and they're at a hot dog stand and all of a sudden they're squirting mustard and ketchup on each other. And then you, was it Herman Hermit's song that's kind of playing over it? And it's just, it's hilarious that, they show all this activity that they're doing. And then at the end, they're just kind of walking along the street. And she's like, well, I had a great day with you. Meaning that they did all this activity in one day. So it's pretty funny. It is a pretty funny movie. I really enjoyed rewatching it. And I needed to because I'd forgotten so much of the detail. Like I said, all I remembered was the baseball part, which was the climatic end of the movie. The part where you had Ricardo Montalban's character he had a situation set up where he was able to mind control somebody to want to kill somebody just by like pressing a button or something on, and they had some device that they were wearing. So in this case, he had like... was it Reggie Jackson for the Angels? Was it the Angels? I think it was the Angels. That tried to kill the Queen of Elizabeth, who is Queen of England. My God, why the hell did I say that? You would have thought I was drinking tonight, but I'm not. Tried to kill the Queen. And so it was leaving, and the hijinks that were going on before that was that Drebin was on the field and trying to search all of the players to try to find out who the killer was going to be, looking for a gun. So at any given moment, he was trying to frisk baseball players. And he was at one time the guy that the opera singer who was singing the national anthem, he was the umpire. And then, at all given times he was frisking people. So it was a lot of fun. So I did enjoy rewatching it. Like I said, the challenge I had was the OJ part. I think Ricardo Montalban played a great bad guy. He has a lot of fun convincing as kind of the comedic villain. So I could see why this is a must-see or an essential movie. I enjoyed the rewatch. And once again, I'm glad that I did because... like I said, I'd seen it probably, I would guess, in the 90s somewhere. In the 90s somewhere, maybe. Probably as it was on HBO or Cinemax or something like that. And I didn't retain much of the details of this at all. So being able to go back and have the opportunity to rewatch it before, doing this particular episode, it helped me. It helped me to say that this was definitely a essential movie and a good movie. So I would recommend, especially if you're into the dumb comedies. And for some reason, Leslie Nielsen was almost the king of those. You just, you know, from enjoying him with the, on Airplane, you know, where, you know, he's the doctor and, you know, Shirley, you can't be serious. And he goes, I am serious and don't call me Shirley. It's one of those things where you have this guy that can deliver those kind of lines and that kind of comedic timing and make it where you believe the character would actually be like that. And he played Frank Drebin perfectly, where you are like, yeah, he's kind of the bumbling buffoon that would do that. So if you get a chance, while it's still on Netflix, I would definitely recommend, if you have to pay something for it, I don't know what that would be. I don't know if you had to pay more than like 99 cents to watch it. I don't know if you should. Depends. Maybe. You know, maybe if you're, you know, getting a good buzz on and you want a good laugh, this would probably be a good thing to watch while you're doing that. So, yeah, that's a good way to tie kind of my preamble topic to this one. So yeah, that's all I really got to say about that. All of a sudden, I sound like Forrest Gump. That's all I got to say about that. And maybe I should start including that on these episodes. Once I get done talking about the movie, I'll be like, well, that's all I got to say about that. So I'm going to remind everybody we have a website. That's BanzaiRetroClub.com, BANZAI, RetroClub.com. So please go check us out. Follow us on our social media. Please check us out, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Those seem to be the ones that we're doing the most attention to. A lot of interaction on Twitter. So I would love to get you kind of interacting with us and following us on that. If you want to drop me an email or drop us an email, that's McFly@BonsaiRetroClub.com. We'll take your suggestions and see what you have to say. With everything that I've just said, I want to remind everybody, please be excellent to each other and have a good whatever. Bye-bye.
This has been a Banzai Retro Club production.
Banzai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Banzai!
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 On the next episode, we're going to be talking about 1984, The Karate Kid.
Woke up this morning feeling fine, had something special on my mind. Last night I met a new girl in the neighborhood, oh yeah. Something tells me I'm into something good.
Something tells me I'm into something.
She's the kind of girl who's not too shy. Something good, something good, something good.